G'day, Evan. How are you?
Good, thank you, Mido. Very good, mate. Just listening to the chat there about the Paul and Mike Tyson fight. It's kind of like the PGA Tour and the seniors tour having an event together and getting full world ranking points. Bit of a G up, isn't it?
Oh, well, there should be ranking points at least in LIV. But yeah, that would be a G up for sure. But and we were at LIV, of course. We saw you there. We had you on with us there at the Grange last Friday. What's the aftermath and sort of, you know, I guess, how will LIV in Adelaide sort of be, I think, used around the world as well? It seems like our model is the model, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%, Mido. I wrote about this in the aftermath of it. Just how do you recreate that? Because it's obviously, they've got 14 events on their schedule, and one of those, Adelaide, is the clear standout. So how do they replicate that 13 other times around the world? And I had a chat with a few people, and they basically said it's not just about identifying, is there another Adelaide around the world somewhere where you get a combination of people who know a lot about golf, but they've been starved of top-level golf? Because that doesn't really happen anywhere in the world, sadly, for Australia. We are the most educated but starved golf market in the world, so you can't really replicate that. So what they're going to do is, hopefully, go to places like Dubai and play a golf tournament under lights. There's never been a men's professional sanctioned event under lights. So go somewhere like Korea, like Seoul, where they have a lot of flood-lit golf courses, Dubai, places like that, and play a 54-hole event under lights on the LIV schedule. They're looking at things like, you know, sort of playing in different time zones around the world, and even kind of just thinking well outside the box. But because it's just, Adelaide is really tough to replicate. But having said that, there were a lot of high expectations coming into Adelaide that it was, you know, maybe was going to suffer from second-year syndrome or something like that. But they increased the ticket sales. That led to about, they estimated 94,000 people walked through the gates for 3 days, which is just absolutely epic. It's, you know, it's a grand final crowd spread out over 3 days, but just atmospheric, a lot of drinking, a lot of good banter, a lot of good fans. And on Channel 7, actually, 3 million total viewers. That's the total number, not the obviously the peak audience or the average audience, but a lot of exposure to golf and kind of set the standard for how to run a golf tournament around the world in the modern day, where you have to incorporate, you know, the experience for the fans as well as some top level golf. So going forward, Adelaide continues to be the benchmark, and hopefully they can live up to that elsewhere.
Yeah, for me, Evan, I'm not a traditional golf fan, but I don't think I might have been to one tournament here, Australian Open, a few years ago for the day. And I enjoyed it, you know, walking around and watching golf, but I didn't sort of, it didn't grab me, so to speak. But down there in Adelaide, I left that event going, I want more. And I know it's not for everyone, and I know there'd be traditionalists out there that say, mate, I can't cop this form of golf. But I think this has got a future, and I think I understood the teams better in terms of what it was all about, this team golf that they've tried to say that this is what makes our tournament a little bit different to the rest of the tournaments around the world. And I don't know, I just see it getting bigger and better, but I might be a minority in that thinking, but what I witnessed and what I experienced was very good, healthy, and I'll go back.
Yeah, no, Loz, you're not really in the minority. There's a lot of people around it, and especially as the golf crowd gets younger and younger, like a lot of people who you mentioned, the traditionalists, they're aging, sadly going to pass away in the next couple of decades, and it's about sort of replenishing. How do you keep people watching golf tournaments? Because all the ratings around the world, especially with the PGA Tour, the Masters was the big one a couple of weeks ago, all the ratings are down. So it kind of tells you that the fans are wanting something slightly different. Agree with you, not everyone's going to like the music blaring and people drinking maybe more than they normally are at a golf tournament. But at the same time, Adelaide, I think, barring a bottle being thrown at Lucas Herbert's caddy, I felt they were very respectful, sort of like flirted the line perfectly between getting a little bit tipsy and drunk, but also being respectful and not interrupting the play. So I felt like, based on, you know, test cricket matches and whatnot, we've set the standard on how to have fun and not be disrespectful at the same time.
Yeah. How was it received, mate, with the teams aspect of it when they went to the playoff? Because it looked amazing on telly, and being Australian there watching it, you just, you know, cheering for the Aussies. But when they were starting to boo the South Africans, how was that sort of received? Because that's not the done thing, is it, in golf?
It's not, and it was a mixed bag, Loz. Some people thought it was hilarious. I personally, you know, just being an Aussie sports fan, I thought it was maybe misrepresentative of our spirit. I don't think it was in the spirit of the game to cheer during their backswings and then cheer their bad shots when Dean Burmester left a bunker shot in the bunker for his third shot during the playoff, and we cheered that result. We were cheering missed putts. It's not really the Aussie way. So I just felt like by the end of it, the crowd was trying too hard to get the Aussies over the line. And the South Africans, being obviously a great cricketing nation, great sporting nation, probably knew that we're better than that. But at the same time, it's just once the cat's out of the bag, it's hard to control that kind of crowd and whatnot. It certainly wasn't boring. And going forward, I think LIV Golf really wants that element. That's the end goal for them, is to, out of their 14 events, it'll grow by the time they get to this, but they'll have 13 or 14 teams, probably 13 teams, and 13 home games where the players on that team own the golf course, design the golf course, and basically run the event with a team around them, to the point where, you know, in a lighter way, cheering those against those South Africans, that's par for the course at every event, because every event will have a home team where thousands and thousands of people want them to get over the line. That's the end goal for them. It may take 10, 15, 20 years to get there, but that's what they see as basically, you know, like almost like English Premier League football, whereas you're sort of watching half of the atmosphere of the home ground and half of the actual play itself. So going forward, I think it's going to be really interesting to see if they can pull that off.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting to see if they did bring one to Sydney. I feel Sydney'd be very rowdy, a very rowdy state. But look, for me, moving forward, I love that. I love that side of golf. I love having a beer and excitement, but I also love the other side of it. You know, I could watch golf without it being live.
Yeah, no, it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people say they enjoyed it. A lot of people say, I'd never watch that type of event. So each their own.
Well, if we look at the Phoenix Open is kind of what LIV Adelaide models it, not even models itself on, but took inspiration out of every year. You know, 200,000 people per day through the gates, a lot of people drinking. The party hole there is sort of what inspired the watering hole at LIV Golf Adelaide. And this year, you know, unequivocally, all the players sort of unanimously agreed that the fans crossed the line, they were abusive, they were way too drunk. You saw people falling over. It was a bit of a mess, and that's something that the PGA Tour probably has to have a look at. And I think Adelaide showed the way of how to have fun, how to have a few drinks, but also barring, you know, cheering against the South Africans and throwing a bottle at Lucas Herbert's caddy's head. Other than that, we were pretty spot on.
Evan, Hannah Green in the top 10 for the first time. She's flying at the moment, mate.
Yeah, absolutely she is. She's got a second LPGA Tour victory for the year. She won a couple of months ago in Thailand, I believe it was. Now she's won for the second year straight at this golf course in LA, a really private course called Wilshire Country Club. Beautiful golf course. Kind of looks like an Aussie golf course, and she's now made that her happy hunting ground. And she's in the top 10 for the first time in her career, which is a lot of people in the know have always known that was her potential, and maybe even she's still got the potential to be world number one if she keeps this kind of form up. And more importantly, it affects our Olympic sort of chances, because now we've got two Aussie girls in the top 10 in the world. We really are a medal chance. You know, I'm not suggesting gold medal, because that'll be very, very tough to knock off the Americans. Nellie Korda, world number one, has won five straight tournaments in a row. She actually skipped the event that Hannah won. So they're going to be very tough to beat to that gold medal. But Australia is absolutely a chance in the women's side of things to add to our overall medal tally. It'll be her and it'll be Hannah Green and Minji Lee as our Aussie team. And it's looking like Jason Day and Minwoo Lee as our men's team. So we'll have a brother and sister on different Olympic teams, which would be great. And you know, Aussie fans should be really excited for Paris that we could potentially win a silver or maybe even a bronze medal, but hopefully silver or maybe even gold.
Okay, over on the PGA Tour, we've got the CJ Cup Byron Nelson coming up. How do you see it playing out? What bets are we having here, Evan?
Yeah, there's a few good bets here. TPC Craig Ranch is the golf course, and this has got a very confusing name, the CJ Cup at Byron Nelson. Jason Day is the defending champ. He likes the golf course, so I'm going with him as the top Aussie, even though his form hasn't been fantastic. Looking down the odds at the moment, yeah, there's plenty of I'm going to go with a random winner here. I'm going to go with Kevin Kisner. As he's transitioning to sort of a broadcasting role, he's keeps telling us that he's not giving up the fight, grinding the PGA Tour. This is a shorter golf course, so it kind of suits him in a way. So Kevin Kisner is my bet, going with a bit of value this week, and And for my top 10, I'm going with Harrison Endicott. I think he's going to turn it around. Aussie kid, you know, really fighting for his PGA Tour status. He came through Q School at the beginning of the year and he hasn't had the form that he wanted. So I'm going with Harrison Endicott for my top 10, Kevin Kisner for my winner, and Jason Day as my top Aussie.
Beautiful stuff, mate. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.